Welcome to the InnovaBuzz podcast, where our job is to help you build visibility, professional credibility, and connection with your ideal client by putting the human at the center of innovative marketing, so you can build and strengthen an engaging, enduring relationship with your ideal clients. I'm Jürgen Strauss from InnovaBiz, and I'm honored that you're here with me. If you haven't joined our wonderful marketing transformation community yet, go to innovabiz.co and collect your free gift as well. Do subscribe to the show and also leave a review because it helps others find us. Let's get into today's masterclass on this InnovaBuzz podcast.
Can't do everything perfectly during the day, and some learns are bigger than other learns, but you got to take them all and you got to adapt them. The great people in this world are not the people who have failed a lot, and they're not the people who failed a little. The great people in this world who learn from every single little thing that happens and then apply what they've learned into their execution the next time.
Welcome back. I hope you've had an awesome week so far. If you haven't yet listened to my recent conversations with Steve Brown, author of The Golden Toilet, and Lisa Johnson, Freedom and Success Coach, then do go check them out, but only after you've listened to today's conversation. I'm really excited today to have on the InnovaBuzz podcast as my guest, Brian McMahon. Brian is from Expert Dojo, the largest international startup accelerator in Southern California. In 2018 and 2019, Expert Dojo brought 400 companies through their startup programs and made 42 investments. They are planning to bring 2,000 companies through their program this year and make 50 more investments. In our discussion today, Brian talked to me about building a growth strategy with a vision that has clear milestones. He explained going from laboratory to dojo and what that means. And we discussed setting expectations of and for yourself, including learning from failure and being adaptable. Without further ado, then let's fly into the hive and get the buzz from Brian McMahon. Hi, I'm your host, Jürgen Strauss from InnovaBiz, and I'm really excited to welcome to the InnovaBuzz podcast today, all the way from Santa Monica, California in the USA, Brian McMahon, who's head honcho at Expert Dojo, the only peak performance academy for entrepreneurs, and he's also host of the Art of Startup War podcast. Welcome to the InnovaBuzz podcast, Brian. It's a great privilege to have you as my guest.
Thank you very much. It's great to be here.
Now, I'm really curious. You tell a story in one of your videos, I think it is, or maybe it's in your TED talk about a dream you had as a 9-year-old selling soda on the beach and kind of didn't quite go as expected because of weather, if I recall correctly. How did you get into the business then? Because you had lots of businesses over the years. How did you get into the business of training early stage entrepreneurs?
So it's a long story, you know. 51 years will make for a long story, but I'll cut it short. Look, I've lived in about 45 countries. I have had 3 or 4 businesses in different countries, everything from property development all the way through to consultancy company, all the way then to a tech company, which I had for a number of years as well. And what I've realized over the years is that a couple of things. Number one, we're all the same, right? Really, if we look at all these different countries and all these different peoples and what everybody wants and needs, like, we all want the same stuff. We want a little bit of purpose. We want a little bit of happiness. We want to feel like we're not alone. We want to feel like we're doing something for a particular reason. And if possible, we would like to be warm and not hungry, right? The beautiful thing about where startup intersects with this is that startup is continually looking for ways that new things can be created to make the world a better place. more or less. So I've been involved in that intersection really for my whole life, and I've just been fortunate to see many, many, many groups of people. And that took me to Santa Monica 5-6 years ago. And at that time, we decided that we were going to invest in early stage startups as our primary business. And that's where we are today. We've invested in around 75 companies. We invest $100,000 checks into those companies. We'll do subsequent investments of up to $1 million into those companies if we really like what they're doing. And we just love the startup space.
Mm, great. Now, you do a lot more, though, than just invest in startup companies, right? Tell us a little bit more about what Startup Dojo does or Expert Dojo does.
Yeah. I mean, first of all, to kind of understand where we came to, it's important to understand the landscape of how startup works. And you kind of have two choices if you're a startup. Like the first choice is that you can start and build a company on your own. And you don't really get venture capital money like ours or anybody else's. And you build that business. And then the only objective of the business is that you want to build up EBITDA or profits so that you've got money that you can pay for the things that you need to pay for to have a good life. And then also that you can grow the revenue of the business so that you have something that maybe gets bigger and stronger and you can pass on to your kids in the future. And that used to be the staple of what entrepreneurship was. And genuinely, when it was the staple, it was a better world. Today, many entrepreneurs will look and say, okay, how much money can we raise from venture capitalists and how quickly can we raise that money? And based on that, how quickly can we grow some monster billion-dollar company? It's almost like, you know, reading one of these books, The 4-Hour Workweek, which might insinuate that you can get just as much money and just as much happy, like out of a four, and it's just not true, right? There are interesting hacks that make your life easier, sure. There are interesting things that make you feel like you're more efficient, of course, but you ain't working a 4-hour work week and earning the same money as the guy who lives next door to you. It's just not practical, not anything else. And startups kind of moved into this space of believing I can build a billion-dollar company in 5 to 7 years, and all I have to do is raise as much money as we possibly can. And this started off as an American phenomenon. And the challenge is that when you start taking shortcuts in anything, what happens is the quality deteriorates and you tend to find that what's built is more shoddy and it's not as good as what was built before. So I'd watched this for years and I'd seen these companies grow and get stronger and bigger, not because they're great companies, not because they can be competitors, but just because they had more money than everybody else. Maybe they went to a nicer school. Maybe they just were related to the right people. Maybe they just went to the right area, but they were able to outcompete other companies because of what they built. And a really good example of that would be Uber. Like if we look at Uber as a company, it's a terrible business model. Like it's truly awful. They lose money on every single ride. Like who would have a business model that for 10 years loses money on every single ride? Uber has never, ever, ever had a year that it has not lost money. And not only that, it's highly unlikely that they're going to have a year in the next 5 years that they are not going to lose money. So it is venture subsidized socialism, for want of a better word. So there's just a problem within the venture space. So when I arrived down here in Santa Monica, we said, yes, we want to invest in companies, but we actually want to go much deeper than that. We want to try and find out like what's causing this great chasm between our amazing entrepreneurs who are starting out on this journey of entrepreneurship and then the few who end up building unicorns, who in many cases are not even that great a model for what entrepreneurs should actually be. And the more we looked at it, the more we realized that people are really struggling with regards to growth strategies. They're merely following like Facebook ads and that's it. And other folks are just too reliant on raising investment. Their whole business seems to be 80% of the time begging investors for money to try and get them in. And we noticed that the brand of companies has just been degraded, which is very sad in America, especially because this is the country of storytelling. So the fact that brand has been degraded down to an area of literally not even being important in a company and being replaced by just awful strategies like lean startup. And then finally, we just noticed that the vision of greatness that some entrepreneurs still have. So Elon Musk still has this, but how many other entrepreneurs are truly building great solutions in a world that desperately needs to have something big doing. So we noticed all this stuff and we thought, okay, let's actually just take the money that we're investing and then let's turn that into something really special. And let's see if we can build a program that's unlike any other program in the world. And it's not a program that anybody can buy. It's not a program that people can rent. We don't take people in from the outside. You don't can't pay a price and go through our click funnel just to make it through to a time where we'll say, okay, you now get to pay only $9.99 for this service. This is only for companies that we invest in. But as soon as we invest with those companies, we're all in with those companies. And then we bring them into the program. We bring them through an extremely intensive 8-week program where they will learn their brand, their personal branding, their vision, their product fit. They'll get introduced to the right types of investors. They'll understand what the investors are thinking. And then most important, they'll get to a place where investors will be begging to do business with them rather than the other way around because they can see a great business being built. So that's our thesis. And the only thing I would add on top of it, other than the fact that like the vision is probably the core, most central part of everything, like helping them build their huge, big, hairy, audacious goal, is the only thing I would layer on top is maybe the fact that mindset has become very important to us over the last few years. And now we look at, you know, how do we have entrepreneurs realizing that they need to think of this like world-class athletes. They need to understand that this is a marathon sprint every single day. And if you don't wake up in the morning and you haven't had a good night's sleep, and if you haven't eaten well the previous day and you haven't had your proper proteins and you haven't surrounded yourself with positive people who are going to help you go forward, then you're going to have a tremendous amount of difficulty continuing when the times come to their absolute toughest.
Hmm. Yeah, that sounds like a very comprehensive program. Now, I believe there's 12 steps in that accelerator program. You talked mm-hmm. about vision as the fundamental part of that, and then you've tacked on mindset at the end. So I'd like to explore the vision part a little bit more first, and then we might come back to the mindset. So you said that not many people go into business and start up with a real powerful vision, and contrasted that with Elon Musk, who has that powerful vision. And we all know that, you know, some of his visions, like going to Mars and populating Mars, is one. What do you think is the cause of that, and how can kind of people address that?
So, number one, it's difficult, right? It's a little bit like, unfortunately, we have a mentality of wanting to have immediate solutions for everything these days. Like, we want to be able to see it in a 20-second video about how we can create our vision. And vision doesn't really work like that. Number one, it's extremely hard. Let me actually give you a great example. So Expert Dojo started out really as a laboratory. Like, we didn't start out as an accelerator. We realized that there was a problem. And the problem was entrepreneurs were failing at a rate of around 98%. And for me, that was unacceptable, but I wanted to understand why. So we created a laboratory so that we could understand why those entrepreneurs were failing at the rate that they were failing at. We then thought, okay, now we've learned a couple of things from a year of having 100 entrepreneurs in front of us that we didn't know before, you know, and there are a lot of the things that I touched on before, such as the brand, the toxicity with investors, the fact that the right foundations weren't in place. And if we call foundation and mindset, it's a very similar type thing. Mm-hmm. The fact that people weren't building the right teams and putting them in place, like all of these things are fundamental markers as towards success in a startup. You know, a team is a huge one. Like, who do you have with you? And what is the proven execution qualities of the people that you actually have in this team? So we went deeper and deeper into this and we thought, okay, fine. You know, we have learned some things right now. And then at that stage, even us as Expert Dojo, we thought, oh, now we can come up with our vision. Our vision is to help more entrepreneurs become successful. But we didn't have enough data yet to know how many more entrepreneurs were successful. And more importantly, we hadn't gone long enough with the startups to be able to come up with that. So we could come up with a general outline of we want startups to be more successful. But we knew we needed to go deeper. So a vision is not something you get at the beginning and you go, oh, I've got my vision. We're going to Mars. No, it's something that you have to realize as you go along. Like Elon Musk is like, first, okay, there are steps to getting to Mars. Number one, we got to get the rocket ship to land. And he's like, well, it's impossible because when it comes back to Earth, it just all blows up in the atmosphere. Well, no, it shouldn't. We need that rocket ship. That's X millions of hundreds of millions of dollars to get it up there. Let's get it back again. And everybody's like, no. And he's going, okay, I'll do it. So he did it. So you have to build milestones that you believe are the milestones that you can see as far as that point. In our minds, that point was, yeah, we're probably going to invest in 20, 30 companies. We would like 3, 4, 5, 6 of those companies to be successful, which means we'll have a higher success rate than elsewhere. And then as we built our program and word got out about our program and we started making some really great investments, then people started to come back and say, whoa, actually, you should invest in more companies. And then suddenly fast forward, we then get to a place where thinking, okay, so we have a training program, we have mentorship, we have investors that we can refer people over to. We have investment that we can make into ourselves. How do we make sure that we actually get the greatest entrepreneurs, the people that we believe in that can break through? And how do we make sure that they want to choose us rather than anyone else? Because speaking to my first point, it's such a biased, unequal system that the majority of folks who are unicorn entrepreneurs, they all went to Princeton or Harvard or Stanford, and they all happen to know the right people who just gave them lots of money. Hmm. And I'm not necessarily taking anything away from them, although I am. I am more pointing out to the fact that if you didn't go to those places, you didn't have a chance. So we knew two things. We knew that within the US, the people who are going to be successful 90% of the time are the people who go to beautiful schools and have got rich mummies and daddies. But we also knew that 100% of those people would not want to come to us because they don't need us, right? So it's very hard to prove out a methodology when the entire system is against that methodology. So we said, okay, which way is the world pointing right now? What are the trends? And the trends are nobody wants to deal with anything international. Like, I don't know what it's like for you, but like for here, you know, I look at it and I watch it, or anywhere, it doesn't matter. Germany, England, America, everybody's closing their borders. Nobody wants anybody in from the outside. Outside is bad, inside is good. And then they're like, okay, not just inside is good, only specific types of people on the inside are good. So we've just got to this very insular world where if you're not on the in, then you're out. And if you're out, then you're in a bad place. So we thought, well, let's just do the opposite. Let's look for the greatest companies around the world and let's just go right against all the popular wisdom because we know there are great companies out there. And we know that if we bring those companies into the States, they will get a roadmap to building one of the greatest companies in the world. And that's what we did. And so we looked for companies in India, companies in Egypt, we have companies in Bosnia, companies in Italy, companies in Spain, companies in Finland, in Canada, and Argentina, and Panama, Brazil, everywhere. And we bring them all in through the US. Nobody else is looking at these companies because nobody cares about them because they're all following the rhetoric and how it is for how do you find your great company here? You go to the right school and just get that company. So we're working harder, but we're finding better companies. So this is a long way for me to say your vision expands as you start to look for like, where's your maximum as far as how high can your mind think? And then we got to that place and we're like, okay, cool. So now we know we've invested in 75 companies. We know that international companies are the ones that we like. Our immigrant founders, our female founders, they all get bunched in the same place for us. And then we thought, okay, great. So where are we going to go to? Probably we're going to invest in 1,000 companies over the next 5 or 10 years. Wonderful. Probably we're going to make a couple of $100 million from those companies that we invest in, assuming everything goes the way it's supposed to go. But that's not our vision. That's just our milestone to get to the vision, But the real vision is we want to be a driving force in making sure that every single citizen of this planet has an equal opportunity to being able to start a successful company. That's it. And that's what I mean by big vision. Like you get to a place like this accelerator thing is fine. You know, our startups will do great. They'll build a bunch of unicorns. We'll do great. We'll get a couple of $100 million. But that what that money will be used for is gets us to our vision, which is revolutionizing the way startup is done around the world. And we will change the school systems. We will lobby to make sure that we can deal with the useless government officials who are responsible for the decisions that get made in all of our countries. And we will make sure that we work with great founders, great investors, great everybody, and we'll help build up ecosystems all around the world. So look, that's our vision. And that's what everybody needs to strive for. If you don't have a huge vision that is game changing and world changing, then what's the friggin' point?
All right. So what I'm hearing there is there's kind of two levels to this vision. There's the big game changing, inspiring vision that, and I'm guessing that this is the one that keeps you going when things get tough, when that 4-hour work week doesn't happen at the snap of a finger, when things don't fall into place simply by, I don't know what's a good example, but we, you know, you talked earlier about living in this instant results world when we realize that's not the case when we start up our first business. So that's the vision that keeps you going. And then there's the vision that, okay, we can get to this numerical target within, say, 3 years, and then we expand on that. But the overarching vision is still that big, ambitious goal.
Yeah, for sure. And there's only one vision. There's only ever one vision. There are milestones to get to that vision. Mm. And they're all part of that vision, by the way. They're not separate visions. They're all part of the same vision to get to that overarching goal. But, you know, when you want to have a world that fundamentally changes, then you have to have a vision that is part of that fundamental change.
Mm. Great. I love it. Now, you talked quite a bit earlier about mindset. So tell me a little bit more about mindset, the importance of mindset, and all the elements of that, because you spoke about getting a good night's sleep, getting the right exercise, getting the right nutrition. So tell us a little bit more about that. Why is that important? And how can we make sure we're taking care of ourselves in that regard as we work hard to get this startup off the ground?
So it comes from a place of expectation, first of all. And the problem we have in these days is that our kids are being brought up soft. So, and especially in the US, but actually pretty much everywhere in the world, right? We're encouraged to tell our kids how wonderful they are, how talented they are, how they can achieve anything they want because they're just the smartest people in the entire world. And the truth is they're not, right? The truth is there is no prize for second place and third place and fourth place. The truth is that the world is a really tough, inhumane, you know, ironically, a place that is going to beat down on you all of the time. And you got to acknowledge that at the very beginning, and you've got to prepare yourself to make sure that you can win against the world. And when I say win, I don't mean that you have to be a top athlete. I don't mean you have to be top in your class. I mean you have to learn how to be happy and fulfilled. And learning how to be happy and fulfilled is setting your expectations at an early age and making sure that you expect stuff. So yeah, do I expect, you know, days to be easy? No. Are you kidding me? We're building, we're trying to get a couple of $100 million so we can change the world fundamentally. Like, what part of that is supposed to be easy? It's not supposed to be easy. But if I spent my time watching Shark Tank and just watching people come out of shows and watching Hollywood and how they portray startup, I would think, oh, this is great. And I've come out, oh, this is so unfair. Oh my gosh, should I just work the whole weekend? Like, that's not right. Yeah, it is right, because you're trying to build a $1 billion company. Like, if you want to sell cans of Coke on the beach, like I was selling in Ireland, God bless you. You can do that on a Monday morning while it's raining. Mm. But if you want to build a $1 billion company, then you sure as heck better train the way somebody's training if they're going to be training for the Olympics. Like, what? We're going to hear Michael Phelps say, you know, I'm good. I'm not going to do any training today. I just want to get some Mars bars and some fish and chips and just relax in front of the telly. Like, what? No, it doesn't work like that. Like, so you have to program your mind initially to be really in sync with the world that we live in and really in sync with what's expected to go forward. And my expectation is that it would be 10 times harder than anything that's actually realistic. Like, I will enter into the week automatically assuming that I'll be up at 4:30 every single morning, and automatically assuming that my last call would be at 5:30 or 6, and automatically assuming that I'll need to do some emails after that, and automatically assuming that I'll fall behind before the weekend, and I'll need the weekend to catch up behind it. And I'll automatically assume that some deals that I would love to get in, some investments I will lose, but I will learn from that. So for me, fundamental failure is not learning from the things that happen to me on a daily basis. Now, in the same way, if we stick with Michael Phelps, like, you know, I got a big race tomorrow and I'm going to race against some of the top swimmers in the world, but I'm going to stay up you know, and I'm going to hang out with my girlfriend or with my guys, or I'm going to go out and I'm going to have a few beers, right? What do we think is going to happen? Mm. Or if I have a pizza, you know, hey, let's go to Domino's and get a couple of pizzas. We're like, what do you think? Like, either you're a world-class startup, world-class athlete, world-class anything, or you're not. And if you're not, it's okay, but let's not pretend you are.
Yeah. And I think you hit the nail on the head there in terms of some people pretend, if you like. They're not prepared to do the work. They have the expectations. This is going to be easy. There's a quick solution. I mean, I see this all the time in the marketing. You know, you default to the automation. That's easy. Or, you know, you can do these tricks to get found on Google, get onto page one of Google. There's tricks to do that. That's the easy part. Whereas the reality is, no, it's not. There's work to do, and there's smart ways to do the work, but there is work to do. So I think that's it.
You got to work hard. That's the reality of life. Generally, with the exception of a couple of folks who won the lottery, and God bless them, although they lose their money generally. But like, with the exception of them, you look at anybody who's been really successful in life, and you'd be very, very hard pushed to find somebody who hasn't worked really hard with tremendous focus at the end of the day. And that doesn't mean that they don't work smart, right? They will all want to work smart. But if they are driven and they are ambitious, then even if they work smart, they're still going to want to do more. They're still going to want to be better prepared. So look, just what I will say is 90% of what I'm saying, people don't do. So if you're a startup and you want to push yourself beyond everyone else, prepare, train, be in shape. Be in mental shape, get your mind right, get it in the game. Make sure when you get up in the morning, you're not thinking of surviving. You're not coming in from a place of fear. You're coming in from a place of aggression and attack.
Hmm. All right. The other thing I wanted to explore a little bit with you, and it comes back to, you talked about failure. You talked about failure being a lesson, and why do you think it comes across that people that are successful, that it's been a linear journey, that they've gone from, you know, zero to wherever they are right now? It's been a linear journey. There's been nothing but success and happiness along the way. Why do you think that's a perception that comes across, and people don't talk as much about their failures and the lessons that they've learned from that?
So look, I mean, different people have different journeys, right? I mean, look, there's a proportion of folks who just get a little bit lucky. You just get lucky. You know, there's like a pandemic and suddenly you're selling masks and you think, whoa, this is a great day. And I just made like tens of millions of dollars. Generally speaking, life brings its fair share of, you know, I always love Mike Tyson's quote, which is like, you know, everybody's got a plan until they get punched in the face.
Yeah.
So we all get punched in the face. That's just how it works. Like, we think our new partner is going to be the greatest partner in the entire world, and then they try and screw us and steal our business. You know, we think our marriage is going to last forever, and it doesn't. We think our kids are all going to be doctors or entrepreneurs, and they end up being street fighters, you know? I mean, so you just got things happen with your day. I mean, and I don't actually see, you know, it's funny. So I'm a very optimistic person generally. It may not sound it, but I'm very optimistic. And I wake up in the morning, and there's very few things that stress me, actually, because I think living out the day of what I do is just such a privilege and a pleasure that if things go wrong, then they were supposed to go wrong. And then that's something that I learned from. I try not to openly court failure, because a lot of the people that I've seen who failed, you know, it's not fun. It's not fun losing your house. It's not fun going through divorce. It's not fun. You know, your kid's not talking to you. It's not fun having no money. Like, no, none of these things are fun. Not fun having to start again when you're 50 or 60. So I try and have small lessons as opposed to failures. And the lessons might be, I might go into a meeting with someone and just be a little bit. So there was a startup where I was super aggressive on, but I was very aggressive on because I really wanted to help them with their marketing. And I felt that their marketing, I felt that they were just being a bit wussy with their marketing, and I wanted to push them on. But I moved too far into a mentor role, which was an unwanted role, and we lost that startup that we could have had an easy investment into, right? So do I see that as a failure? No, it's just a learn. I mean, you can't do everything perfectly during the day, and some learns are bigger than other learns. But you got to take them all and you got to adapt them. The great people in this world are not the people who have failed a lot, and they're not the people who failed a little. The great people in this world who learn from every single little thing that happens and then apply what they've learned into their execution the next time.
I love that. It comes back in some ways too to the mindset part, doesn't it? To have that mindset of, I will probably screw some things up. Secondly, that's okay as long as I learn from them.
Yeah. And also, exactly. And look, and on one side of it, I truly believe that we are the greatest accelerator on the planet. I'm not just saying that. I believe it. I really believe it because we built our whole programs around it. Everything we've built, we don't believe anything else happened. Does that mean that we're the best accelerator on the planet? Yeah, in my mind, it does. But in other people's mind, it doesn't. So what that means is that every single day, I need to go into their minds and I need to find out, like, what is it that we're not providing that can become better that we can provide the next time around, right? So you have to go. Part of mindset is your outlook on how you face every single day. You know, I see folks and they come in and like, and the world is unfair and everything is tough. And, you know, it's really, and that's because they're, you know, they may, I don't know, maybe their mommy and daddy spent too long. Hey, look, and I'm all for hug. Look, I'm all for hug. I'll hug and kiss my boy all the time. I'm all for that. So I'm not talking about like getting too Jesuit priest on this whole situation, but I am saying that it's good to give a dose of reality to how things are happening. And if when someone's a kid, you get them to appreciate the really great things that happen and get them to understand that actually that's not normal. Like the normality is you have to look for these wonderful experiences. And then when they come, you'll appreciate it. And actually everybody shouldn't expect to have a Lamborghini and a Porsche in their front drive of their 72-bedroom mansion. Like they got to work for this stuff if that's what they want, right? Or they've got to work to find the purpose that they want in life. Then what happens is folks come into life with an attitude like mine, which is life is great. Tough things will happen. People will be mean. My workday will probably be harder than I think, which means I got to learn more and become better. So when I approach my day tomorrow, then I will be better prepared to be able to overcome and achieve. And a little bit of adversity is not a terrible thing either. You know, I always remember there's a famous thing that Lionel Richie said about his daughter. And he said, look, I'm worried because she's never had one of the legs of her four-legged stool chopped from underneath her. A little bit of adversity. You know, there's people out there who have been sitting on two-legged stools for a long time. And those people, man, you hit them with a day that we would call a tough day. And they're like, are you kidding me? This is a great day. So a little bit of adversity helps. Letting people experience that helps. And then creating an attitude where you go out of the world and you say, let's create amazing, phenomenal, brilliant things. Let's create really good purpose around it. And then let's make sure that we protect my body. Like I start 4:30 every single day. And then I finish probably 7 o'clock or 8 o'clock. And then I'll do weekends as well. So if I don't take care of myself from a fitness perspective, from a mindset perspective, from a sleep perspective, then I don't care how superhuman I think I am, I will fail. So you just got to be cognizant of all of this stuff. We're like a motor car. Tune up the engine, make sure we give a little bit of a buff outside, make sure that we're dealing with the rules of the road correctly, and then we can go all out.
Yeah, I love the analogy. All right. I'm reminded of a saying in German, and the translation doesn't actually do it justice really, but it talks about adaptability and how people that are adaptable or anyone that is adaptable can basically transverse any kind of situation. So what do you think about the importance of adaptability and, you know, in the light of what you've just said, that some people have had that four-legged stool all their life?
Yeah, I mean, look, it's well known. Like, is it like the meek shall inherit the earth, or the cockroaches will inherit the earth, right? But you know, it's you know, we're gonna have nuclear wars, we're gonna have, you know, ice ages, we're gonna have everything. Who's gonna survive all the way through? And then that whole Darwin quote of survival of the fittest was never survival of the fittest. It was always survival of the most adaptable. So it's not the biggest, it's not the strongest, it's not the smartest. It's the people who get to evolve. It's the people who can look at the environment they're in at that time and say, based on this current environment, how can I thrive? And those people are the ones who'll break through. They'll realize, you know what? We're in an environment where it's like desperately cold, and it's the people, and everybody's got big coats on, and they can't do it. And me, because I'm actually, I can get myself to have a warmer body, then I'll be able to adapt better. Like, it's just finding what is it that can make me a more adaptable person so that I can thrive in this particular environment. And COVID is a great example. There's two types of people in COVID. Like, there's most people who sit home, they play video games, they talk about how terrible it is, the bars aren't open, restaurants are all closed, you can't sit out, I can't see my mates on a Friday night anymore, my work is terrible, you know, I'm going to lose my job, I haven't got and some of those people, by the way, have absolute rights to do this. And then you've got other people who say, oh my gosh, this is the best time in the world. This is a time when real wealth is going to be generated. There are new industries that are going to come out of COVID that have never existed before. And I'm not going to spend one second watching Netflix. I'm going to spend all my time going out and finding out what is it that's going to happen. Like, how is the world turning on its head? I mean, home care for elderly people, how is that going to change during COVID? And delivery products, how is that going to change during COVID? Is there an opportunity for me to be able to do something here? Everything, like the whole situation. Am I going to sell masks? Am I going to get into, like, there's so many changes that have happened over this period. And how many people will just say, the same as they did with Facebook, oh man, I had that idea. He was just lucky he came up with it before me. No, man, he wasn't lucky. He knew how to execute while your fat ass was sitting on the sofa eating tortilla chips and watching the latest Netflix movie.
Yes, I love the idea of, I thought of that idea, and I always come back with that. Often I say, why didn't you tell me about it? Because we would have done something. And, you know, just pointing out that it's the person that takes action that is actually the one that deserves the reward. Now,
what was the case?
Yeah.
Gonna.
Yeah.
Everybody's gonna do this.
Yes, my business coach has this expression that she calls them gunner people. They're a gunner.
She's right.
Yeah. All right. Well, this is fabulous, Brian. I think it's a good point now, because we're getting on a little bit in time. It's a good point to move on to the buzz, which is our innovation round. And it's designed to help our audience, who are primarily innovators and leaders in their field, with some tips from your experience. So I've got five fairly pointed questions. Hopefully you'll give us some snappy, insightful answers that'll inspire the listener to go do something awesome as a result today.
I will try.
What's the number one thing anyone needs to do to be more innovative?
Just open their eyes in the morning. Most people have got, they wake up in the morning, they close their eyes, they go to the bathroom, they do the same bodily functions in the same way. They go downstairs, they have their breakfast, they drive to work the same way. And if you said to them, hey, what did you see on the way to work? Did you see that guy with the red T-shirt with the bandana? He'd say, what guy? What T-shirt? What red bandana? People have got their eyes closed the whole day. Open your eyes. Look at what's wrong in the world. Look at what needs to be fixed. There's a heck of a lot of things.
Yeah. So it comes back. I call that, in some ways, curiosity. It's maybe curiosity is taking it a step further. It's looking at what's there and then saying, I wonder why that is the way it is. But yeah, that's
I call it dead. People walk around like they're dead. They just walk around all day. And if you say to them, how is work? Like, a great example is, you come home from work, like 9 hours. 9 hours you spend in the place. How is your day, love? What do you do? I was good. What, just good?
Yeah.
Hang on a sec. What did I do today? Because you were like asleep. Like, walk around like a 9-year-old kid. Have a notebook with you. Write down the interesting things that are happening. Write down the interactions that are happening. Write down the things you're seeing. Like, if you see the railing, which could be made better, like, look at the railing. What's wrong with it? What's not happening with it? If you go down the beach and you see that somebody was trying to hang off, like, what is it that could be better? There are millions of things. The Mark Zuckerbergs, the Airbnbs, the Elon Musks, all of these guys could easily be you. The only difference is their eyes are open and they're looking for fundamental change. Seek out change.
Great advice. All right. Now, what's the best thing you've done to develop new ideas?
The dojo, definitely. I just surround myself. Are you kidding me? Like, I surround myself with hundreds of the greatest entrepreneurs in the planet. I'm like Linda McCartney, you know, with the Beatles and the Rolling Stones and Thin Lizzy and the greatest bands in the world playing gigs every single night, and I get to hang out with them. So the smarter, the more great companies I bring through, the smarter I get, the more smarter I get, the more we can help companies and make their journey a little bit better. So yeah, without question, this accelerator was the greatest thing I ever did to become a smarter entrepreneur.
So surround yourself with wonderful people in your area and learn from them.
Yeah, just genius. Find creative genius around you, and then don't settle for schmucks that just want to suck the life out of your life. Just go and hang out with people that you want to become.
Mm. Great advice. Now, do you have a favorite resource you use most often?
There's loads. I actually really like LinkedIn these days, even though I've got somehow 13,000 contacts and I've no idea what to do with them. I love the fact that I can easily find anybody anytime. I think it's like a super resource. I mean, there's loads of others. Look, we've got HubSpot, which I really like, and MailChimp, which I don't dislike, and a bunch of others. But I do like how simple LinkedIn have made it for us to connect on a business level.
Hmm. Yeah, I see LinkedIn changing a little bit. I don't know how you see this. I see them kind of putting in a real effort to move from this job platform for job seekers to actually a platform where people can connect and have meaningful conversations.
Yeah, they're getting there. They fought this for years because they really wanted to be a job platform, because for years they raised investment on the basis that their revenue model was going to be a job platform. Yeah. And I think now they've just realized, look, what are we doing? We're the greatest business connection platform on the planet, and we're trying to become a recruitment agency. Like, come on, let's just be what we are and be the best we are at it.
Mm. Yeah. All right. Well, I think that's a positive move. So glad you see it that way too. Now, what's the best way to keep a client on track?
So I'm a huge milestone guy. Like, I'm a big, I mean, so for us, they're not so much clients, but they're cohort members. But then they are clients, right? Because we make the investment in them. And the way our business works is, like, they need to continually increase their valuation based on increases in rounds that they received, and then also in revenue that they drive into their company. So I really believe in milestones. I really believe in setting specific milestones. I like OKRs, objectives and key results. And I like really setting out like what somebody's going to grow to, and then making sure that we stick with that. Most people don't have milestones. What they do is they do a business plan. It's a lovely business plan. It's so beautiful. It's like got flowers and everything around it. They fill in all 36 pages. They've got projections, not even 1 year projections. They got like 5 years projections. Like, this is something you could put on your coffee table and people would pick up and they would say, you are so smart. I cannot believe this business plan is so beautiful. And you will say, yes, I am. But it's about as much use as tits on a bull, as my dad would say. So you just build milestones. Just be simple. Like, don't make this thing complicated. Very simple. I need to have this amount of revenue per month to make sure that I'm making a good living, whether it's through a venture-backed business or a service-backed business. Okay, great. How many clients is that? This much revenue is 27 clients. Great. How many prospects do you need for that? This revenue is like 270 prospects. Great. How many activities through what channels do we need to do to achieve that? You know, it wasn't wrong 60 years ago.
Hmm.
It's the same principle. What they then need to do is make sure that that's not a monthly goal, that is a daily goal. And when you wake up in the morning, the very first thing is to be intentional about making sure that you are business outreaching first. You are doing your activities first to hit your goals. And that way, at the end of the day, you're seeing if you're on target or off target, and if you need to change the channels that you're going through.
Yeah.
Milestone.
Yeah, there's so much gold in that. I particularly like the, you know, breaking it down into daily activities and then starting your day with the business outreach.
Always. You got three types of people in business. You got creatives, logistic folks, and then you got biz dev people. The creatives and the logistics folks find it extremely difficult to do what I just said. The biz dev people, they just need to have great logistics people around them so that they can just calm them down and they can make sure stuff gets done. Like, if you said to me today, you know, hey, Brian, did you check the lights last night in the dojo? Are you sure they're off? I have no clue, and I don't even care. But that's why I have a logistics person, because I should care. What I do care about is, do we have the right amount of investments in the dojo to be successful going forward? Yes or no?
Hmm.
And if we don't, what the hell are we going to do about it in the next hour?
Yeah, so have people in designated roles as well to make sure everything's working.
Yeah. Hmm. Yeah, but lead from the place of importance, and that's driving business.
Hmm. Wonderful. All right. Now, what's the number one thing anyone can do to differentiate themselves?
You build a brand. Just make sure you got a proper why. You know, hardly anybody has a proper why. Everybody leads with the features of their business. And features are so boring. It's just like, so what do you do? Well, I make furniture. Well, great. No, that's not what you do. What you do is you help middle-class families who struggle for money have the luxury and comfort that they deserve by providing them with furniture that normally they would have no ability to get access to, but you provide because you care about how they feel, right? So build a brand of something that's really important to people. Don't just throw out a load of features, because if you do a load of, and don't differentiate in price. Don't dare differentiate on price. If that's all you've got, then go home. Differentiate based on a real why. And I always like, I think Simon Sinek, even though it's going back a little bit now and he's been around for a few years, I think his talk on the art of why is a really good, would help make something that I'm explaining in 5 seconds make far more sense. So just look up Simon Sinek, the art of why. You'll understand exactly what I mean. Have a phenomenal brand that people love.
Great. I love it. And I love the example too, the furniture. And yeah, it's so frustrating, isn't it, that a lot of people just go straight for the features and how wonderful this product or this service is because we do A, B, C, D, E. And they don't talk about the result. They don't talk about how it makes you feel, who it's for. So building a great brand.
Yeah.
All right. Well, thanks, Brian. This has been fabulous. Now, where can people find out more about Expert Dojo, your work, and maybe even reach out and say thanks for what you've shared today?
For sure. Anybody can always reach out by email. It's just brian@expertdojo.com. If they want to apply for investment, they can apply on expertdojo.com. You can find it there. You can see right there on the front page, there's a big apply button. And then there's loads of resources on the website. Like we don't really do podcasts for folks outside, but I think they're very useful for folks outside. We do podcasts with our startups. Mm. So we bring startups in, and then the startups we invest in, we then talk about why we invested in them, and we talk about what their growth plans are, what they're doing. So I think anybody starting a business would find that really useful. And then, yeah, otherwise, anybody can always reach out. I will reply to everybody.
Thanks, Brian. That's great. And we'll post links to all of those in the show notes as well.
Awesome.
So do you have some parting advice for our listener today?
Yeah, just look, if you've got a job, then don't give it up. But for crying out loud, stop building somebody else's dream. Get some purpose. Build something of quality. Build something of value. Build something that when you get to the end of your life, you can look back and say, I did that. But don't be silly with it. Like, don't give up all of your job and your money and your house and everything else. And then say, I'm going to start a job tomorrow. Like, I don't want to hit you with a Tony Robbins. All I'm saying is, that have purpose in your life. There are so many great ideas that haven't even come out yet. They haven't even been started. And it could easily be you who brings that thing out. So open your eyes, take notes, look around, look at what's being built, look at what's happening in the world today, find your unique you, and then look for a path with really phenomenal milestones to help you build it.
Great. I love it. All right. And finally, Brian, who else should I get on this podcast and why?
Who should you get on this podcast? I would say, I mean, there's lots of people. I think venture capitalists are actually not the worst group of people to get on podcasts because they see startups from a very different perspective. So I would say grab a couple of venture capitalists and get them on the podcast. Yeah, for sure.
Okay. We'll see what we can do. Well, thanks so much for sharing your time and your insights with us so generously today, Brian. I've really enjoyed our conversation, and there's been so much great advice there that I'm looking forward to sharing with my audience. So thanks for all of that. And I wish you all the best for the future, and let's stay in touch.
My pleasure. Thanks for having me.
I hope you enjoyed that insightful and informative conversation with Brian and took something away from his episode. There was so much great information from Brian in today's episode. One that particularly resonated with me was to lead from a place of importance, a way to set your priorities. I'd love to know what you took away from Brian's episode. Leave a comment below the blog post, which you can find at innovabiz.co/Brian McMahon. That is BrianMacMahon. All lowercase, all one word, innovabiz.co/Brian McMahon. You'll also find contact information there to get in touch with Brian, as well as links to the Expert Dojo website, the Art of Startup War podcast, his social media pages, and the other resources we spoke about in our conversation today. If you liked this episode, please do share it with two other people that it might help. Tag me in that share, and I'll reach out to you with a special surprise. Tune in again to the next episodes of the Innova Buzz podcast, where we've got yet more fantastic guests lined up, including author of Getting to Yes And, Bob Coulhan, and the marketing consultant and author, Nick Smith. Thanks for listening to this episode. Make sure you subscribe to the show to be reminded of new episodes. It's free to subscribe. Leave a review if you like. Even if you don't like me, I'm okay with that. I'm asking you to leave a review because it helps other people find this show. Go to innovabiz.co to join our marketing transformation community and access a free gift my team and I made for you. It's the Marketing Master Mini Class. We want to give you everything you need to transform your marketing into a human-centered, relationship-focused growth engine. Until next time, I'm Jürgen Strauss from InnovaBiz. Remember, be awesome and keep innovating.